Welcome into the Polite Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Page. Got a great show for you today. Best-selling author Kurt Mortensen, an expert in persuasion and podcaster on persuasion, is going to join the show to talk a little bit about Donald Trump and the world of politics. But before we get there, well, we're going to get into the world of politics. I am recording from the results of the New Hampshire primary. I'm watching them right now. Here from D.C., watching the results of this New Hampshire primary. Want to give you a little bit of an outline of where things are going on, and what's going to happen. Let's start simply with the Democratic Party, because it's a little simpler. Bernie Sanders has won a huge victory in New Hampshire. He pulled Iowa closer than I think anybody thought he would have a few months ago, and now he has won New Hampshire in a landslide, in spite of the fact that virtually no elected Democrats are supporting him. That's huge news, and it signals vulnerability in Hillary Clinton. Mr. Sanders is starting to pick up endorsements from minority communities, which is interesting because the criticism of him has been that all of his supporters are white, and frankly, the Democratic Party is not majority white. And so the thought was, as things move from New Hampshire to places like South Carolina and Nevada with more minorities, that he would struggle. However, he's starting to reach out into those areas. So we will see what happens with Mr. Sanders. He's going to have to broaden his appeal within the Democratic Party, but national polls are starting to show him having a chance of doing that. It looks like he and Hillary Clinton are going to have a race that's really going to be a meaningful race, at least for the next few states, and we'll see what happens. Turning to the Republican side, things are a little more complicated. Donald Trump really did win a primary in New Hampshire. He really is the winner, and he won it in a blowout. He did it by two things. The first is that he has brought new voters out. He has brought new people who have not voted before or who haven't voted traditionally, and he's bringing them out. These are typically blue-collar males, and really appealing to them. He's also appealing to a subsection of the traditional Republican electorate, and he's getting about 30%, and that seems to be going well for him. Following him, in this night, we have John Kasich, who is the governor of Ohio. He has a very positive message. His speaks very positively and tries to have that message very Christianized, but also very moderate for the Republican Party in this race. So an interesting candidate to watch. I thought he gave a great speech tonight, talking a little bit about building America, you know, home by home. So we'll see. I think he has an interesting opportunity. Third, fourth, and fifth are really up in the air. They're about tied. Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz, in some order, will finish 3, 4, and 5, but they're all neck and neck. And then beyond them, Carly Fiorina, Ben Carson, and Chris Christie are all pretty much out. You can expect them to be dropping out in the coming days. They're all going to be irrelevant and giving up on the race because none of them has a chance to win the nomination. So within that, what we have now is a two-person race on the Democrat side that's a real race between Hillary and Bernie, which we didn't think we would have. And on the Republican side, we have a five-person race that is about the way I projected it would be a few months ago, if you listen to that podcast. A few months ago, I laid out that we would see Trump and Cruz fight for control of one lane, and we would see Rubio and Bush fight for control of the other lane, with the winner I still think the winner of Rubio and Bush will probably win the nomination. I think it's going to be Marco Rubio, but Rubio had a bad week, turning in a poor debate performance that probably cost him a chance to win second place in New Hampshire. Now, John Kasich is the one I didn't see coming, and we'll see if he's for real or not. The race is about to get very expensive. These first two states are all about retail politics. If you can afford to drive around the state of Iowa or New Hampshire and just shake hands with people and meet people, you can contend in those states, but that's not the case anymore. And so the Republicans are going to go to South Carolina. A couple other factors to consider. First, John Kasich, competing for a lot of the same type of voters that Bush and Rubio are. They're more establishment-y lane. And then you're going to see Trump kind of pulling his crowd of people that he's adding to the process. But my guess is that you'll see him and Cruz battle it out here as the race moves into southern states. And it's going to be an interesting race. Cruz probably has a little bit of an advantage going into that. But Trump has shown to be pretty capable. So we'll see which comes out of that. But Trump did get a big win tonight. After that, you're going to see the winner of Bush, Kasich, Rubio. And I still say I think it's Rubio, but I could be wrong here. But the winner of that lane is going to take on the winner of Trump and Cruz. And I think this probably goes through most of the primaries. I think this is still going to be a contested race. So we'll see how that goes. On the other side, Democrats, I think for the first time, are really taking a look at Bernie Sanders and saying he's someone we think we could vote for. And kind of giving him a late look for the first time. Hillary's problems have been well documented, but she's also well liked among Democrats, and her strengths have been well documented as well. So we'll see what happens there. But that's the state of the race as we leave New Hampshire and move forward. Thank you so much on that segment. I am going to take a quick break, and when we come back, my interview with Kurt Mortensen, an expert in persuasion. We're going to talk about how these candidates are appealing to people. I hear all the time, how is this happening? How is Donald Trump doing what he's doing? We'll talk with Kurt about that. Thanks so much. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics Community fan page on Facebook, and be sure to tell your friends. Welcome on to the podcast, Kurt Mortensen.
Thanks, Tyler. Doing great. Good to be here. Excited to talk about persuasion influence in the fun world of politics.
Yeah, Kurt, you normally do nonpartisan podcasts, and this is still nonpartisan, but fun to have you jump a little more into the political arena. I'm curious, from what you've seen, what are you seeing in terms of just unique persuasion plays this election season that you haven't seen in the past?
Well, I think a lot of them are trying to, you know, a lot of this is because of Trump, to try to appeal to people, try to appear more honest, more down to earth. They're trying to spend more time trying to connect with people. I think it's backfiring for some. It's working for others. And that's always been the thing, where they all start out polite and connecting, and then they start turning on each other, which is always interesting in the world of politics. But that's like the biggest one, because trust is an all-time low in the business world and in the world of politics. And they're spending more trying to connect with people and trying to build that trust. Not always working, but I see that focus a lot more.
Yeah, you mentioned Donald Trump. I think political scientists across the spectrum are just baffled by this guy. Mm-hmm. Can't figure out how he's doing it. And I've sat back just kind of amused, to be honest, watching him embarrass our media. You know, this podcast is all about disliking the way our media does things. But I'm curious, what are you seeing? What is he doing that is appealing to people? How is he doing it?
And you're right. When I do, you know, radio interviews and different things, people want to know, what's Trump doing? What's Trump doing? And that's on people's mind, because all the media outlets that we're going to make fun of, right, they're saying, oh, it couldn't work. And it's working, and it's driving people nuts. And so I see kind of three things that he's doing that's a little bit differently, that's really resonating with people. The first one is that he's not politically correct. And I think a lot of the people, especially in the United States, feel oppressed about being politically correct. They're not trying to be rude, but there's so many rules and regulations, and you say the wrong thing, people are offended, you didn't mean it, and he doesn't care. He's going out there, and he's speaking what he thinks from his heart. He's not politically correct. I think people really appreciate it. That's the first one. The second one, I think, is that people have been trained to not like politicians, to hate politicians, and to distrust politicians. I mean, you look at the numbers, distrust for politicians is an all-time high. And he doesn't come across as a politician, so I don't think there's that same, what we call in the world of persuasion or influence, the association trigger. Oh, politician, liar, dishonest, just say anything to get my vote. He doesn't have that same feeling, so people don't automatically distrust him. So he has a little more trust than the other candidates, when the people that, especially ones that are resonating with him and like him. And the third one goes back to the world of influence, is a technique called similarity. We tend to like things, like people that seem similar to us. And that's what he has over the other candidates, is he's been around. He's always been in the media. He's good with the media. He's had reality shows. And the studies show that the more we see somebody, the more we like him, the more we connect with him. So he has that going with him. In fact, an interesting study on that, on a local election, party aside, one of the biggest factors that shows someone's going to win is the number of signs they've seen, because that increases similarity and people tend to think about that person a lot more. And that's what Trump has. People have seen him around before. They've had that connection. And that's made all the difference in the world for him as he's gone out there and hit the campaign trail.
It's so fascinating to me, especially when you think that Trump is almost dissimilar and tries to say he's dissimilar, right? I'm a winner. I succeed. I do this. I mean, frankly, a lot of the candidates, if you were to pick, pretty much any of them, they've probably had a more normal-ish life than Trump has. I mean, Trump born into this and reality TV and all that, and yet that similarity, just that familiarity is leading the way for him.
It is, and it's made a huge difference because there's been that connection. And granted, with Trump, there's a love-hate relationship. There's really nobody in the middle. Yeah. You either love him or you hate him, and part of that is what he's been doing, his background. And it's, you know, interesting to see he's a lot wealthier than Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney got beat up for his wealth, and that hasn't been an issue in this race. And so that's part of his message. That's part of the connection he's had with the similarity and not coming across as a politician. He's doing the exact opposite, and that's resonating with people, and that's a big eye-opener for the other politicians.
Yeah, do you think that you mentioned Mitt almost seemed afraid of his wealth. Mm-hmm. Like, he was afraid, he didn't want to do it, and Trump has never been afraid of his wealth. Like, Jon Stewart famously said he wanted to put Trump in gold letters on the White House, jokingly. But do you think that's part of it, that Trump just kind of owns it and says, well, yeah, that is who I am, so what?
Absolutely. He owns it. Yeah, I'm wealthy. I'm a billionaire. I earned it. Versus Romney, he was a little apologetic for it. I mean, he earned it. Compared to Trump, he really got in and earned it and built a business and was successful and lived the American dream. There's no apology for that. I mean, that good for you. You made it happen. And that's what Trump did. Yeah, I am. And I'm not taking money and not doing this. And he's turned it to a positive, to where he's not taking bribes, right? He's using it. Yeah, I'm wealthy. And it's actually a benefit to you because I'm not going to be bought off.
Okay, well, when you talk about this, you mentioned the influence on other candidates and other candidates trying to not be PC. I'm curious, are there any other strategies you're seeing from Trump that other candidates are trying to mimic with or without success?
I would say that's the biggest one, to where they're trying to be more down to earth. They're trying to be more real. A lot of them, they're not pulling it off, most of them, because a lot of them are career politicians, and it's just ingrained. I don't know if they went to politician school where they're become these mind-numb people where they have to do it this way. So I think we're seeing the connecting the trust card, and I think it's not working out as well because they're not coming from a place of success where Trump's been there, done that, he's been successful. I think the people are going to have to decide, do we want someone that's completely different, or do you want someone that's is what people consider a typical politician.
Awesome. Well, Kurt, one last question for you. I know on your show you like to talk a lot about persuasion blunders and persuasion ninjas. Is there a persuasion ninja moment you've seen in our campaign so far? And is there a blunder moment that you look at and say, oh, wow, that was just awful?
Well, we'll start out with the blunder. And we both agree that when you look at Hillary Clinton and how she's handled the whole email scandal, the cover up, the half truths, the lies. I mean, it's just there and it's stuck and it keeps coming out and people are sick of it, but it's the way it's been handled. It's not great how she's just hasn't been honest with us. That's what we feel as far as what she's done. So that's probably the biggest one out there where people feel there's been cover up, there's been lying. I mean, politicians are known for lying anyway. Now it's very blatant. That is a huge blunder. The ninja, oh, there's so many ninjas out there as far as what people have done right. But you have to give that to Trump. I mean, he's been out there. He's broke through the barriers. He's connected with people. People like him. And everyone said he couldn't do it. And he does what he wants to do. And that's one of the reasons he's resonating with people. And I'd add one more blunder too, as far as Ben Carson. People ask me about Ben Carson, the difference between Trump. He's kind of gone down in the ratings. Now he's coming back up. He's got a great message, but he's not resonating with it much as people. I've done a lot of research on charisma and that connection. He's got to step up his game and be more charismatic if he wants to get those votes, if he wants to win people over, because he's got probably the best story of anyone. I mean, rags to riches, from no hope to hope. I mean, there's some great story there that could really resonate with American people and what they want and what they want to accomplish. But on the charisma, the energy side, captivating people, he does have a great message there. I mean, if you read his message, it's captivating, but the way he's doing his debates and being non-charismatic has really hurt him in this political cycle.
Yeah, before I let you go, I'm curious, is there anything, I mean, he's very soft-spoken. And I remember in the early debates, the pundits would all say, oh, Carson was terrible, and then he'd go up in the polls. Right? And then some foreign policy things came to a head. Is it just not the ability to speak persuasively or talk like he sometimes in foreign policy, I'm not sure he knows what he's talking about. Is that it? Or what is it that people can take from that? I mean, I think he's a tough one to identify to me because his pitch is very similar to Trump's.
It is. And that's what's fascinating with that. If you look at his story, it's a great story. And early on, I think people connected with him because of the story. But when you look at persuasive presentations and be able to give that debate, there's a lot of things wrong. When you look at vocal fillers, when you look at rate of speech, the faster you speak, not sounding like a fast talker, that increases your charisma and energy. He doesn't speak fast enough. He doesn't have enough vocal variety in his voice. The inflection's not there. And what that does is that people don't buy into your message. It's almost like he's not buying into it. If you're not excited, if you're not passionate, if you're not charismatic, if you don't feel like you have a moral and ethical obligation to change the world, you might think that way, but it's not coming across in his demeanor and in his voice.
Good. Well, you've just inspired me to talk faster on this podcast.
There you go. Speed it up. And you don't want to sound like a fast talker, but if you increase your overall average rate, it increases your energy and charisma, and it gives people less time to think of counterarguments are the reasons it works so well.
Very cool. Well, Kurt, why don't you tell us a little bit about where people can find you and find your work?
You bet. You can find our podcast at maximizeyourinfluence.com, where we do a weekly podcast of persuasion, influence, and motivation. Or you can go to maximuminfluence.com. You can take a look at my books and other free training materials to help you become more persuasive, influential, because we all persuade and influence for a living.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kurt. Appreciate you stopping by.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Thanks for downloading the podcast. Be sure to like the Polite Politics Community fan page on Facebook and be sure to tell your friends.